Good afternoon. Welcome to the Queensland Country Hour. Indeed, I should say good morning. We are a bit early. My name's Ali Felton-Taylor, of course, because of the cricket today and tomorrow. In the next half an hour, though, it's something no parent should ever endure. That's the loss of a child. This particular young girl's death sent shockwaves throughout rural Australia, and today marks the one-year anniversary. Dolly Everett is being remembered by family and friends today. We're going to speak to the head of the Queensland Isolated Children's Parents Association about the progress being made to tackle bullying in schools. Also in this half hour, Queensland's Rural Fire Brigades Association is calling for the deadline for submissions to the government's bushfire review to be extended.
So having a report in and submissions closing on the 25th of January it's an unsustainable timeline.
It's a bit too tight. We'll speak about that very soon. First, though, to currency markets. And the Aussie dollar has hit its lowest point in around a decade this morning, trading just above 67 US cents, which is good news for Australian agriculture commodity exporters. Mercado analyst Matt Dalgleish says the Aussie dropped like a stone and lost a cent on the market, but has since bounced back to a level that still means our products are relatively cheap in foreign currency terms. He explains the holiday market softening has been exacerbated by a sell-off, particularly after some news from tech giant Apple in the United States.
Aussie has been softening through that Christmas New Year period, but just this morning we saw a reasonable sell-off and an uncharacteristic kind of move, really, and I think it's on the back of some fairly thin markets, you know, around that Christmas New Year period. But we've saw the Aussie get to a low of, I think it dropped to about 67.10, which is, you know, lows we haven't seen in nearly 10 years.
The festive period aside, what other factors are influencing that dip in the dollar?
The broader move lower is really an interest rate play still, that we've got interest rates rising in the US and ours aren't really set to rise in Australia at the moment. So that's been the broader move, was to while we've seen the Aussies, you know, going from, say, the mid-75-cent level down to, you know, 70 cent now more recently. However, this morning's sell-off was a bit more of a risk-type appetite scenario. We had some announcements out of the US, and in particular from Apple CEO, just saying that their growth outlook was going to be impacted, and concerns of growth in China impacting Apple share prices and that kind of the whole scenario, and the outlook for China started to impact upon a few currencies, and one of which was the Aussie, because of our trade relationships into China. That kind of impacted the Aussie. This morning we saw a sell-off of over a cent, fairly sharpish. It went from just below 70 cents to 67.10, I think the low was, so it's a significant sell-off, but it has bounced since then.
So it's corrected?
Yeah, that's right. It's back at around 69 cents at the moment. So it's kind of went down, you know, nearly 3 cents and then bounced back up. So we're probably down a cent now from yesterday's trading levels.
Generally, a lower Aussie dollar is good news for export commodities, particularly ag commodities, of which we export most things. What does this level mean for those prices?
Yeah, that's right. Look, I like to call it, you know, there's a Goldilocks range for the Aussie, and it's generally around that 75 cent level. So that's the long term average, you know, if you look back at the last 20 years or so, 75 cents has been around the long term average. Anything when you're getting down to, you know, kind of high 60s, you know, above 65 cents is still pretty good. So that means that our products that we're exporting overseas are cheaper in foreign currency terms, so it means that there's higher demand for our products, our ag products, so that's a good thing. Once you're getting below, you know, say below, you know, 65, 360 cents, it starts to impact upon some of the imported product we get in here, like fertiliser and fuel and tractors and all those kind of machinery items become a bit more expensive. So you don't want the Aussie too low. And that's, you know, going below 60 cents. If you're getting up around, you know, kind of above 85 cents and high into the 90 cent level, then it starts to impact upon our export commodities. So we don't want it too high either. But at the moment, you know, around the 70 cent level is on that lower end of that Goldilocks range. So that's still a pretty good thing for us at the moment for agriculture.
And a great way to kick off the new year. Is the expectation that it will continue?
Look, I think I'd be surprised to see it get below 65 cents and sustain it below there. The only thing would be, unless we had a significant situation in China, would be the key that would drive it, you know, further down to that low 60s. But I think, you know, for the time being, we're looking at probably a range of 65 to 70 cents, you know, for the next 6 months to a year, I think is fairly reasonable.
Matt Dalgleish, he's a market analyst with Mercado. Now, a short time ago, the Aussie was buying around 69.3 US cents. The lower dollar has boosted exporters on the share market. And a short time ago, the ASX 200 index was up more than 1% to 5,620, with gains across the board. Of course, everyone watching that with interest, and of course, watching the level of the Aussie dollar as well. Now, the LNP has joined Queensland's Rural Fire Brigades Association in calling for the deadline for submissions to the government's bushfire review to be extended. The state government announced the review last year after unprecedented fires across the state. The current deadline is January 25, which the association says doesn't give enough time for brigades and communities to contribute. General Manager Justin Chaveau says it's important volunteers' experience on the ground is taken into account.
So the bushfire review is only being held open for a fraction over a month over the Christmas period. Now, that really doesn't give rural fire brigades who fight the fires, landholders who own the fuel, so therefore they own the fires, and the community to get a submission in. So we're asking for the Inspector General of Emergency Management, who is holding this bushfire review, for an extension and also for a copy of the terms of reference.
Is QFES doing its own debrief process about the most recent fires?
Well, most certainly. So Queensland Fire and Emergency Services is a department, and the department has three service delivery arms. So it's got the State Emergency Service, it's got the Fire and Rescue Service, and it's got the Rural Fire Brigades. So there's 1,400 Rural Fire Brigades with 36,000 volunteers in Queensland, and they cover 93% of Queensland. So the fires we had this year, and the terms of the review are really only looking at the fires between November and December, which is quite narrow, because in the Wide Bay we had very, very large fires. Look at the Waluga fire. So that was in October, and we had large fires at Tugulawa. So we'd also, when we start corresponding with IGEM, we'd also look at them expanding out that the time frame you're looking at. So back to your question. So Queensland Fire and Emergency Service has three service delivery arms. And at the end of any campaign or large event, what will happen is, in different rural fire service areas and fire and rescue areas, brigades and firefighters will get together and say, what worked well, what didn't work well, what could everybody do better next time, and how can QFES better relate with other agencies to make the community safer? So that's normal. That's normal behaviour. At the end of that, there'll be learnings. Now, that process doesn't really finish till the 21st of January. So having a report in and submissions closing on the 25th of January it's an unsustainable timeline. A good example is national parks. So the 2013 Malone Review into the Rural Fire Service, Malone Review Recommendation 45, said that national parks, the exemption they have for writing permits under the Fire Service Act, which is Section 66, should be taken off national parks, and that should come back to rural fire. Now, we know that national parks are getting larger and larger and larger and larger. So they are a landholder. And like any other landholder in the state, they have a legal responsibility to manage their risk. But what we're hearing from brigades and communities across the state is that they are under-resourced to manage that risk. So the fires are coming out of national parks, and also brigades are going in and fighting fires in national parks, which they're happy to do. But national parks is not well enough resourced to be able to work with the volunteer firefighters to fight the fires on national parks. So that's the sort of information that really needs to come back.
That's Justin Chaveau. He's the General Manager of the Queensland Rural Fire Brigade Association, speaking with Sarah Bell, and QFES has been contacted for comment. It's 16 minutes to 12 on this shortened version of the program.
You're listening to the Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
With me, Ali Felton-Taylor. Now, you may have seen on social media, it's been 1 year since the Northern Territory boarding schoolgirl Dolly Everett took her life due to online bullying. To quote a Twitter post this morning, "Today marks 1 year since Dolly Everett passed away. We've still got so far to go, but look how far we've come." The Queensland president of the Isolated Children's Parents Association, Tammy Irons, agrees and says a lot of progress has been made when it comes to addressing cyberbullying in the 12 months since Dolly's death. But she would like to see detail of the state government's proposed school-based program.
I think we've definitely raised the awareness. I think a lot more people are having probably a lot more conversations around the issue. However, in terms of dealing with it, I think it's always going to be an ongoing issue, and it's going to be up to individual schools as to how they implement programs and that from now on. And I think it's up to schools to be in front of technology, because unfortunately, I think technology has certainly brought this to the forefront of our minds.
Are all schools acknowledging that and embracing it?
From what we've heard, we've definitely had positive responses from schools. We don't have a lot of information from the department, for example, on exactly how these programs will be implemented. I believe schools will probably have their own way of dealing with it and be able to implement them as to what suits their school. In terms of, I think it probably comes down to, for parents, a big question will be how they're going to deal with phones, the use of phones within schools.
The Queensland government has also come on board with cyberbullying. Where are we up to?
Yeah, the Queensland government has invested money into the cyberbullying programs to go along with the Dolly's Dream Foundation and the Alana and Madeline Foundation working together to implement programs. We don't really have any specifics as to where this money will be directed exactly and how it will help our schools, especially in rural and remote areas. However, we're waiting for information from the department, and we're sure we'll be updated as soon as they have some.
You've requested it?
Yeah, we definitely requested it last year when the announcement was made at the launch, yeah.
But still, that was October.
Yeah. We have no further information as such, other than programs will be going into schools. And the Premier's definitely said that this will be helpful to rural and remote schools. So just not sure whether it's going to be internet-based, face-to-face. Really just looking for some specific details as soon as we can get them as to how these programs are actually going to roll out.
Because would the ICPA like to be involved with the crafting of those programs?
Oh, we'd certainly like to be involved, as we would have liked to be involved in the task force. I think we're in a unique position with our membership base to actually know the needs of these children that are heading off to boarding schools and the needs of their families, as well as to how best to support them in the area of cyberbullying.
Tammy Irons, you're a mum of teenage kids. Since the really sad passing of Dolly Everett about a year ago, what changes have been brought to your family?
Yeah, we've definitely increased our conversations around the idea of bullying, the concept of what it actually looks like. I think the biggest thing for our family in particular was that the kids really had this idea that to be bullied, you had to, you know, you couldn't be pretty and you couldn't be skinny. And why would you be bullied if you looked that way? So it really has increased the conversations about anybody can be bullied, and it doesn't matter what you look like. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from. There are always opportunities for bullies to take advantage. And so we've really just talked a lot around that, and obviously around the reactions to do with bullying and what you do.
Do you monitor your kids' usage of their phones?
I definitely try.
Yep.
And as I said before, I guess it's hard as a parent and as a school. You really have to take some responsibility and try and keep in front of what's coming up. But it's really difficult these days. There's so many ways to hide things. And the kids are a lot more tech savvy than I think we give them credit for at such a young age. It can be quite frustrating. We definitely have the conversations though, and my kids know that I have their passwords and I can look at their things at any time, and that's got to be okay.
And do you find that your kids are open to the conversation of bullying?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think that is actually a lot easier these days to have that, because I think they see it. They absolutely see it. And as long as you can define it to them and they know that that is actually bullying, I think that we can have those conversations.
That's Tammy Irons, the president of the Queensland Isolated Children's Parents Association, speaking there with Amy Phillips. Of course, thoughts today, especially with Tick and Kate Everett, they're Dolly's parents. And if this story has raised any issues for you, the number for Lifeline is 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. Don't forget Beyond Blue as well, and the Kids Helpline service too. I think just put any of those into your search engine and you can find them very easily. It's 11 minutes to 12.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
Sounds like an odd time for the Country Hour, but indeed it is. Of course, we are fitting into the lunch break of the cricket. The country half hour indeed will be on the same time tomorrow. Now though, it's time to check in with the Weather Bureau. Rick Threlfall is the senior forecaster there. G'day, Rick.
Good morning, Ali.
Let's check out what Cyclone Penny is up to. First of all, it seems like it's the most significant factor on the chart.
Yeah, it certainly is. Penny's now a Category 1 system, has moved very rapidly towards the east out of the Coral Sea, and now is about 750 kilometres east-northeast of Cairns, so well off the Queensland coast. Still is a Category 1 system, and through the course of tonight, expected to move to the east-southeast still of the Coral Sea, possibly intensifying to a Category 2 system overnight tonight. And then at this stage, still looks likely to take a turn towards the southwest over the course of the weekend, back towards the Queensland coast, and at this stage looks most likely to approach the Queensland coast early next week, perhaps around about Monday night into Tuesday. But obviously at that kind of lead time, there's still a lot of uncertainty around, and really encouraging people to still keep an eye on the track maps. They'll be issued every 6 hours through the next few days, just as we can sort of refine the area that it will cross the coast in the coming days. At the moment, it looks most likely to cross the coast as a tropical low, but there is the potential that it could remain as a cyclone, a sort of a weak Category 1 system as well. And yeah, still pretty difficult to pin down exactly where it will be, but it looks likely that it will be at least sort of north of Fraser Island, probably most likely to be north of Rockhampton, but still a large spread of solutions, so definitely worth checking over the next few days. But hopefully it will bring some wanted rainfall to parts of the east coast, and then potentially spreading a bit further inland as we go through the middle part of next week, but that is still very uncertain. But it could bring a little bit, at least an increase in shower and storm activity over sort of central and southern parts of the state. But I don't want to promise too much at this stage, because there is quite a lot of uncertainty with what happens with Penny mid to late next week.
Rick Threlfall, that's music to a lot of people's ears. They'll hang on to that hope given the low rainfall tallies we've been talking about on this program. So is it guaranteed to boomerang around? Is that what you can say at this stage?
Certainly not a guarantee, unfortunately, with cyclones. I don't think much is guaranteed, but it does look more likely that it will take that turn back towards the coast. Certainly the majority of computer modelling that we look at, and we look at quite a few models here that do have that turn back towards the coast through the weekend, likely approaching the coast around the middle part of the early part of next week. So that does look fairly likely at this stage.
All right, well, we'll wait and see, as you've said. Today, though, big rain still on the peninsula. That seems to be the best spot if you're hoping for some rainfall. Is that right?
Yeah, it certainly does across the very far north, generally north of Cowan or north of Lockhart River, across the very far north of the Cape. They had about 100 millimetres in the last 24 hours there with frequent thunderstorms, and there's already quite a lot of thunderstorm activity across the top of the Cape as the monsoon sort of lingers on in that area. But away from the far north of the Cape, a lot of the shower and thunderstorm activity sort of through the west of the state and into the southern interior will be very hit and miss, very isolated. We did see a few millimetres in the Channel Country last night from thunderstorm activity, but only talking about 2 to 4 millimetres from any storms of the interior of the state through today, and still very hot in the west, generally about 5 degrees above average for the next few days. We're also seeing a little bit of shower activity around the eastern districts from the sort of Capricornia down into the far southeast of the state. A few showers around with the odd thunderstorm as well, but they'll generally only produce around about 5 to 10 millimetres or so. So a lot of the interior really staying mostly fine through the next few days, but just generally pretty hot in the west. And most of the activities across the far north of the state for the next few days over the peninsula, until we start to see perhaps the Penny or the remnants of Penny coming back towards the coast early next week. And then we'll start to see that rainfall picking up along parts of the east coast then.
Let's find out what's happening with coastal waters. Obviously, Penny still affecting what's happening on the coast.
Yeah, that's right, but we have actually lost the strong wind warnings now, so everything has eased off in the last 24 hours. Generally, we're looking at east to southeasterly winds for most of the coast around about the 15 to 20 knot mark, and that stays much the same really through the day tomorrow. Fairly fresh winds around the central coast, southeasterly winds there getting up to 20 to 25 knots at times, and I guess the best sort of winds in the moment are in the far southern waters, south of Sandy Cape, generally southeast and northeast winds there, about 10 to 15 knots, but north of Sandy Cape still pretty fresh at this stage.
Rick, thanks very much for your time.
Cheers. Thanks, Ollie.
Cheerio. Rick Threlfall, he's the senior forecaster at the Bureau of Meteorology. Of course, we'll watch with interest what happens with Cyclone Penny and the potential for it to boomerang around and perhaps come back along the east coast of Queensland. Just a note, while we're talking about cyclones, the Fiji Meteorological Service says a tropical cyclone has formed north of the country there. Cyclone Mona, currently around 200 kilometres north of the Rotuma Islands, and is tracking southeast at about 30 kilometres. An hour. It's 5 minutes to midday.
The Country Hour on ABC Radio Queensland.
We've just been talking about cyclonic weather. Of course, two cyclones have swirled around the Gulf of Carpentaria and Cape York Peninsula already this season. And while they can be disastrous, they can also bring much needed rain, a point often overlooked, especially for the fishing sector. Much like the adage, mud means money for the livestock industry, decent rain can also mean a ripper barramundi season. Cairns reporter Eric Barker has been covering the storms. G'day, Eric.
G'day, Arlie. How are you?
Pretty good, thanks, mate. We've heard the latest with Cyclone Penny, and we've already had Owen crisscross the top of the state. But what's the feeling for the barramundi fishery?
Well, Arlie, as you heard Rick Threlfall say just before, there's been plenty of rain up in the Cape York Peninsula. So for those fishing those rivers that are up there, sort of north of the Staten River, I think the feeling is quite positive at this stage. There's still a bit of a few people are still a bit nervous about those rivers in the bottom of the Gulf. There's some of the bigger catchments are like the Flinders River, which haven't received much rain yet. However, it is just in January, the first couple of days of January, which means there's still a couple of months of the wet season to go. I spoke to Neil Moretto, who's from the seafood marketing side of the industry, and he works with quite a lot of barramundi fishermen in the Gulf, and this is what he had to say about it.
Well, we don't have Neil at this point. We'll try and grab him. Sorry, Eric, all best laid plans. That seems to have been lost in the system. But we'll get to Neil as soon as we can. In the meantime, can you tell me what's happening with the prawn industry? Does it mean the same sort of thing for prawns?
Yeah, very much the same sort of thing for prawns. Their season starts a bit later than the barramundi season. The barramundi is just a couple of weeks away on the 1st of February. The prawns is a couple of months later. I can't remember the exact start of their season, but when I had a brief chat to one of the prawn fishers yesterday afternoon, he was saying that it's a similar sort of thing. It is positive to see some rain around, especially early in the wet season, but they really want those Gilbert Rivers and the Flinders River to run, those are the ones where they really feel like they're able to cash in.
Hey, Eric, we found Neil Moretto. He's a seafood marketer. Here's what he had to say.
It's a good start to the wet. The monsoon's dropped down as it should, right on time. And hopefully we just see that flow through to a couple of nice wet months. You know, January and February is very important. Very important for the barramundi, very important for the prawn. So we hope we see this wet extend.
That's Neil Moretto, of course. He is a seafood marketer, so that's great news there.
Yeah, so he was feeling quite happy about the whole situation. It's a bit of a funny one, the wet season, as you know, across most primary industries. I feel like most people just sit there at this time of the year with their fingers crossed. There's not much else they can do about it.
Indeed, or a line in the river. Are you much of a fisherman?
Not a big fisherman. I don't mind doing it. I'm sort of more of a, coming from Western Queensland, and more of a put the rod on the bank with a bell on the end of it and have a drink.
and hope indeed. That's I'm sure what a lot of people are doing at this time of the year. And of course, those fingers crossed for rain. Eric, thanks very much for your time, and we might even squeeze a barramundi recipe out of you if we have time a little later on. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Ali.
That's Eric Barker. He is the Cairns reporter, checking in with us about what the wet season has meant for the barramundi season here. It's that time of the day. Well, it's been a shortened program, and indeed it'll be the same situation tomorrow. We're fitting in with the lunch hour of the cricket here on the Queensland Country Hour. We're going to head back there very soon. Just out of interest, the Aussie dollar is still sitting at 69 US cents, so that's great news for ag exporters, as we well know. Don't forget, you can find out more on our website, abc.net.au/rural. Time now to head back to the cricket.